for those of you who were listening before when we were doing our sound check, I instructed the... it's an iron. It's an iron from Canterbury.
Yes, that's what I need.
I wonder what they're trying to tell us. So the candidates have been told that they're going to be making an opening statement to you in a random order. I'm just trying to read the handwriting. Paula of the Waiting Time, you are here, I guess. She's going to have very nicely ironed clothes next board meeting. Good stuff. Our candidates are going to make an opening statement, and then we are going to take questions from the floor. They are going to answer things in a random order. My assumption is that a question will be put to all candidates unless you explicitly state otherwise. Candidates, I'll name them, and we're trying to be as unbiased as we possibly can. I'm going to name them by their given names, and I'm going to leave their introductions up to them. They don't know who is about to be picked on first. Peter from Christchurch, go ahead, please.
Good morning. I'm Peter Ravenclaw. I am a person living in Christchurch. I am totally blind and a guide dog user. It is my intention to represent the citizens, the blind citizens of New Zealand, visually impaired and blind people, very strongly on the foundation should I be elected as a director. I am concerned with issues that we have within our society. Awareness is one. The ongoing services of the Blind Foundation is two. Guide dogs is three. And other issues such as investments, asset investments within our foundation, and that is very important factors. I know what people are going through when they are blind. I've only been blind 4.5 years and have learned to adapt my ways to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Cam.
Kia ora, everyone. Just hope
that you can hear me.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. Kia ora, everyone. It's Pam McNeil here. I've been a member of the Blind Foundation since I was 9. I have partial sight and I now am totally blind. I'm a business owner myself. I've just launched my own business, Disability Responsiveness New Zealand, and I'm a very enthusiastic advocate for disabled people and blind people in particular. The areas that I'm really keen to focus on if re-elected to the board, and you know that I've been on for a very short time because I've just stepped in for someone else who's resigned, I would like to focus on employment particularly. Strengthening the relationship with Workbridge, and I am on the Workbridge board as well, so that should be possible. And also strengthening the numbers and quality of opportunities for blind people to work within the Blind Foundation, particularly at leadership levels. I've seen the numbers drop off over the years, and I do feel that there are lots of suitably qualified people who could be working within that organisation. Employment is very dear to my heart because I don't believe that economic sustainability is possible for us without some good employment options and some good education options. I don't believe that any one board member can do everything for everybody, so I do think it's important to focus on some particular areas, and they are the areas that I will focus on the other hand. Thank you.
Alan?
My name is Alan Webster, and I live in Auckland. I believe I have the necessary qualifications, experience, skills and capabilities which would enable me to function as an efficient and effective member of the Board of Directors. When operating as a management consultant, I use the following qualities: critical and creative thinking, positive can-do attitude, the theoretical knowledge, and the practical use of strategic management, management of change, and organizational development. A common sense approach to problem solving, excellent oral and written communication skills, and personal and professional integrity. My experience is that I was an elected parents' representative on a school's board of trustees and was elected as its chairman at the beginning of my 3-year term of office. I have taught on a part-time basis for 44 years and the coaching on a one-to-one basis and being involved in management consultancy occurred from 1987 when I graduated from the University of Auckland with a Master of Commerce degree. It was my effort at lobbying which resulted in the foundation being registered as, and since 2012, functioning as an incorporated society. I would like to be given the opportunity to help to continue the process of change, which would enable the foundation to undertake and the process of change and in order to become the foundation of the blind, both in name and in action.
Clive.
Good morning, everyone. Clive Lansing speaking, and I want to talk about two things that I would change about the foundation if I could, presuming I was elected. And remember, I would just be one voice out of nine. But first, I would really like, I really like the slogan the foundation is currently using, A Life Without Limits. I think it's all about being empowered to be as independent as we can be. So even though we're blind, deaf, blind, or vision impaired, we're able to just live our lives in much the same way as other people do. And I don't think it's enough for the foundation to just say, well, you know, call us when you need us. The foundation needs to work actively with those people who need support so they are inspired to be more independent and so they are ready to take those steps in their journey towards that life without limits. Also, I think the foundation needs to connect much more with the blind community as a whole. Of course, it's easy for the foundation to just surround itself with blind people who are contented with what they are getting. But for other people that are perhaps dissatisfied for whatever reason, the foundation tends to be dismissive of those people. I think the foundation cannot be all things to all people, but it can at least be respectful of all people. And I want it to show that it is really in touch with the feelings and whatever may be, you know, resonating through our community. So I'd bring to the board a considerable knowledge of blindness and vision impairment, and how the foundation can really make a difference, backed up, of course, by a lot of governance and management experience throughout my life. Thank you.
Judy.
Morning, everybody. I am a current board director, and I'm very keen to serve another term on the board, if not a further term after that, if people want me. The things that are most important to me around the board work is that I'd like to see blind people live the lives they choose to live and realise their dreams. I'd like to see the foundation to be agile and flexible and leading change and not responsive to change. For me, that is a really important part of the foundation's work, and not specific areas, but across all areas that it works in. It is important that we have a foundation that can do what members want it to do within reason to what in order for them to live the lives that they wish to live. I have been a blind foundation member since the age of 4. I went to the school at the foundation and mainstream for my secondary school years at the age of 30 and a mother of 3. By that time, I began my university studies and studied through to a master's degree where I studied a thesis on how blind people identify themselves. So I have a lot of blindness-related practical as well as advocacy and strategic policy background. Oh.
Garth.
Kia ora tātou, ngā mīnui kia koutou. Ko Garth Clary, Coach Baha. Good morning, everybody. My name is Garth Clary, Coach. I've been partially sighted since birth, but it's not about me. It's about this foundation. It's about who we are. It's about the fact that the foundation has been here to support people who have low or no vision since about 1891. It has responded to the challenges of being an organisation that represents and works for people with low or no vision for all of that time. I believe that we have some serious challenges going forward. I believe that given the nature of resistance to changes and disability, given the fact that funding modelling is changing, given the fact that there is a struggle for relevance for a number of organisations these days, we are in the process of facing one of the greatest challenges this organisation has ever had. So for us, it's going to be very difficult to consider the possibility of kakore I mutunga ki te ora, a life without limits, unless we have good, strong, strategic thinking around the board table, unless we have a clear line of sight between our vision and our purpose. Our purpose and our strategy and the strength and the business plan that we put into place to make sure that we are able to continue to operate as an organization that is strong and very, very relevant into the future. I'm aware that there are some significant challenges in that space. I've been around for quite a while around the governance table, both at a corporate level, at a not-for-profit level, and also on an international council. I'm familiar with finance. I'm familiar with strategic and critical thinking. And these are the skills that I can bring to an organization like the Blind Foundation. And these are the skills which I am happy. I'm happy to put on the table.
I hope you give me some license. I've got two questions. The first one is that given that every year since about 2008, the number of people, senior staff who have been earning in excess of $100,000 a year has grown, what would be this panel's attitude towards implementing a living wage for all of those staff members who do not reach that threshold? That's my first question.
I'll get you to hold your second until the second round, if we can.
Okay.
Living wage. Alan.
I would have to query you a little bit. There are points for and against, and I would have to do some research, first of all, to in order to understand what is actually meant by the living wage. And then once having done that, I would then have to sort out options as to whether or not it should be implemented.
Judy?
For me, it's about the living wage is quite a wide-ranging statement. It's getting value for money, so ensuring that people are well paid for what they do and they do a very good job. So it's around measuring what they do and paying them accordingly to the position that they hold, rather than saying we're going to pay everybody under a certain amount of money, because I think that detracts from what we're trying to do, which is to have a foundation that shows and illustrates leadership from the top right through to the bottom.
Clive. I think it's, I am committed to the concept of a living wage, and I think the important thing is for the organisation to have values and to treat people like everybody would want to be treated. So I do think, you know, obviously wages will vary, but I think there should be a commitment to ensuring that the people who are working for the Blind Foundation, no matter what job they're doing, can at least you know, are going to be at least living a comfortable life at home and not scrimping and scraping and still coming to work. So I think it's about values, and I do support the idea.
Garth?
I'd like to respond to the question in two ways. The first way is that I sense that from the way the question was worded, that there is an element of dissatisfaction involved in the fact that there are more people who have wages over a certain amount and those who have wages under a certain amount. I couldn't comment on the people that are earning more than $100,000 at this stage because I don't know and I haven't been on the board yet. But I am absolutely committed to human dignity, and that goes right back to the whole concept of worker rights and of human rights. Being a business person myself, that's what I absolutely believe in. So from my perspective, some research needs to be done. I need to ask some really interesting questions of the organisation once I become involved, and from there I can respond better.
Anne?
I have absolutely no hesitation in supporting a living wage, and in fact, in my business dealings over the last 6 years, whenever I've employed people to do things for me, I have never paid them less than $20 an hour as principal.
That leaves Peter, yes?
Peter, was that? Yes. Yes, a living wage is very important. However, I believe we must keep it in perspective. Too often, living wages or wages that people have tend to get out of proportion. We cannot afford, as a foundation, to pay huge, huge wages and not get fantastic service. We get fantastic service now. Let's maintain that. And it is important that we keep things in perspective. However, people have to live and survive. It is probably different living in Auckland to what it is living maybe in the South Island. So let's keep those things in perspective. The living wage, I support it hugely, but I want it to be kept in perspective. Thank you.
You guys need to check on that, right? Because counting to six is hard, especially for a statistician. Murray, you've got a question for the candidates?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, my question for the candidates is about advocacy. If the foundation continues with the community advocacy program, what will you personally do as directors to make sure that when the foundation advocates for something, it does so with the mandate of the membership, that it does so in consultation with Blind Citizens New Zealand? When it organises campaigns, it actually consults with members about what they actually want and the issues that are important to us. So in other words, will you actually stand up for our community and make sure that when the foundation speaks, it's got a mandate to do so?
Okay, that's the question. Alan.
I believe the foundation itself should not be involved in advocacy at all. Of the blind people should be carried out by blind people itself. Therefore, from my point of view, Blind Citizens New Zealand should be the body which carries out advocacy on behalf of the blind.
Pam?
I have no idea how the processes actually work around such things, but I mean, when I listen to people talk, such as yesterday, I can assume that there would be some work together, and I would be very horrified if the foundation were just going off alone to do this. So yes, I would definitely want to know that the association had input into that and what their views were.
It is the job of the Blind Foundation to support their members, and I believe for this reason that the members must be supported by the board of directors. So let's be a combined force and enhance what members want, because they want it for a purpose,
and we, as if elected as a board member, we need to support those ideas from the members, whether they be a little member at the bottom of the South Island or a member at the top of the North Island. We, as board members, need to support them strongly, and I will advocate and support those members as much as I possibly physically am able to do. Thank you.
I believe in the idea of the Foundation and Blind Citizens New Zealand, other consumer organisations that do this work, working together. But it's very important that we understand the distinction between an organisation like the Blind Foundation carrying out advocacy based on its professional knowledge of blindness and an organisation of blind people that is advocating on the basis of its lived experience of blindness.
Garth?
I'd like to go back to our vision statement, which is a life without limits. Ka hore I mutunga ki te ora. It seems a little strange, but from my perspective, advocacy is about the things that we do every day. The Blind Foundation works as advocates for the people that it serves, and that is something that we can, it's a responsibility we cannot abdicate. That being said, if we are going to advocate for our constituents, then the advocacy has to be targeted, focused, and it needs to be something that comes from the people, for the people, and to the people. So from my perspective, we need to make sure that advocacy works and works effectively in conjunction with all of the other things that we're doing.
Judy.
Thanks, everybody. I was part of the advocacy pilot workshops and the evaluation, and also at the very beginning when the idea was first put to the board around having an advocacy program. I totally endorse Garth's final comment about of the people, for the people, by the people. I believe there's plenty of room for partnerships and with all the consumer groups to ensure that we get all perspectives from the wide whole blind community. And there's also room for consultation within timeframes around developing different sorts of advocacy, because you've got advocacy at so many levels. It's not just a generic term that you can trot out and say this is advocacy, because it covers all walks of life, all kinds of people, and in all sorts of scenarios, and even sometimes things you do every day, sometimes you need advocacy for as well. So a collective agreement around advocacy, roles, consultations, campaigns, and work closely with each other where we can to ensure that what we get is something that people are mainly happy with. You can often not get full consensus around advocacy, but you can get agreement.
Okay, the next question is coming from Vaughan. While the microphone's going to Vaughan, can I remind people, if you want to ask a question without using the microphone and you have access to the technology, then you can email to Rose, rwilkinson@abcnz.org.nz, and she will read your question, time permitting. If you can't, then hold up your hand with your fingers spread wide, and someone will come to you with a small notepad and write your question down for you. Okay? Vaughan, your question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When, as a board, you receive service line reports about performance of specific services, what types of information would you be looking for, and how would you deal with service user complaints?
I couldn't hear the question.
Shall I repeat it, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
When the board receives reports on service performance across the range of Foundation service delivery programs, what types of information would you as candidates be looking for in those reports, and how would you as directors deal with service user complaints?
I assume we've all heard it. Clive?
I would be looking, first of all, for indications that the members are getting the outcomes from the services that they expect and that they should be getting. There's talking going on. It's just
can get the noise down a bit, please, in the audience.
I also think when it comes to complaints, there is already a complaints process. I would want to be sure that complaints process is truly objective, and is a complaints process that members can have and should have confidence in. I think it's very important when it comes to complaints that it isn't just a sort of a nod in the direction of objectivity. I think it has to be a proper objective process, and that members who have a problem, have a complaint, are respected, and that they do have confidence that that their complaint will be dealt with properly.
Alan?
I would be looking to see if the achievements which had been planned had actually been achieved, and that the outcomes were positive from the point of view of the member. From the complaints point of view, I believe the members should have confidence in the system that is used in order to overcome the complaint in a positive frame.
Judy?
I think there's several parts to this question. I believe reports to the board from Sandra include things around services. They often raise issues around different services to us and bring the board's attentions to changing trends, things that are not working so well and things that are working really well, which is a good way of having reports. And I think that's what we... And they include members' comments sometimes, which puts the reality around the service provision to us as board directors. There are also reports on people's attainment of their goals and explanation around their achievement or why they've been changed or their lack of achievement, which usually is fully discussed between not just one staff member but several staff member and the person or the person's family concerned. As far as complaints go, we've got a process in place. We receive complaints and compliments on a regular basis, which are taken very seriously by the board director when they come to the board table for looking at.
Thank you. Garth?
There's a couple of things that come up out of this particular question. The first thing is the fact that we've got to be very careful as a board that we don't move into an operational mode when we have things like service user summaries come to us. As a board member, I would not expect to get service user reports. I would expect to get overarching information from my chief executive and that chief executive's team, letting me know how the service user is performing, what kind of comparators we need, what statistics we need to have, where there are exceptions in the reporting structure. In other words, where there are areas that we could potentially improve, make better, or even change quite dramatically. This is the information I'd expect to get as a board member. The rest of it, I would expect to hold the operations part of the organisation and the chief executive to account for the fact that there might actually be exceptions in that report and find out ways that we can work collaboratively to make those changes that will improve it. As far as complaints go, I believe there's a complaints process in place, which from what I gather is relatively robust. If it needs to be reviewed, that is something we can do.
Reports are very important, and the structure, the content of them, I believe, is essential, but it must be accurate.
We, as elected board members, if we are, it is important that we have this information so that it can be ongoing, enhancing our service all the time. But a lot of reports tend to have information in them that can be quite irrelevant. The complaints structure, I think, is very important. I believe it is quite foolproof at the moment. Let's enhance that and keep it going. But we, as elected board members, are responsible to be able to put out to our members the accurate information and work on it from there. Thank you.
The lens that I would use when looking at service reports would be whether there is evidence of continuous improvement and what the quality appears to be and whether the outcomes are really there for the members of the foundation and not just the staff, because that can sometimes happen. In terms of complaints, I would want to, again, be really sure that complaints will resolve to the satisfaction of the member and not just, oh, we've done a process and tick the box.
Okay, so Rose is about to read a question received to her. We have others, but this is the first one received this way. So, Rose?
Right. It's Rose here. So the question for all candidates is, when thinking about consumer organisations, how do you see they should be funded? And if elected, what would you do to bring this about?
Judy?
Thanks, Jonathan. I see that consumer organisations are a pivotal part of the blind community and the blind sector. I believe that they should be funded on the work that they do and not just for their mere existence. So I think if there's a good project that an organisation's got on the board, they should be looking at promoting their project to the Blind Foundation to see whether they can get some funding. But I also believe that the organisation should be looking elsewhere for funding as well, to complement what they've got from their own donations and what they get through the foundation. So all it has to be, must be very accountable back to the organisation who's giving you the funding, so it's been shown that it's used for the purposes it was got for.
The consumer organisations must be accountable for the funding they receive, and I do believe the foundation should be funding consumer organisations, because the foundation raises a lot of money, really, in the name of blind people in a way that consumer organisations really can't do. But I also think that in making consumer organisations accountable, the foundation needs to have a genuine understanding of the realities of being a consumer organisation. The volunteer energy, the passion that people have, whether it's organising a goal ball tournament or running a conference like this and everything in between, the foundation needs to understand the practical aspects of how consumer organisations run. And I think the foundation strategically needs to do what it can with its resources to see that consumer organisations are healthy and functioning properly.
Pam?
The Blind Foundation is really lucky that it's got the advice and the interest of its members in the various consumer groups that that meet. And no other organisations that I know of have that level of interest. I mean, most clients just kind of are passive recipients. And I think it's great that the Blind Foundation gets this advice from consumer groups. The way that I would see it funded, well, I guess rather like the way government contracts with various agencies, that perhaps consumer groups could come up with projects that they believe fit their advocacy role and get funded for those projects. Obviously, there would have to be some core funding as well, though, because things have to go day to day. But that would ensure as well that there are some very practical outcomes to the work. So I think that's important too.
Alan?
Yes, I believe that each consumer organisation should draw up a budget and then submit that budget to the Board of Directors. And once the Board has considered the budget, it should fund the consumer organisations fully as to what is in the budget. And once the money has been given to the consumer organisation, the board must make sure that the organisations are responsible and accountable for what is being used by receiving from the consumer organisations a summary of how that funding was used.
Garth?
I actually see the Lion Foundation as one of the great consumer organisations. It's an organisation that's been around for its stakeholders, its consumers, since about 1890. And it's in a unique position to be able to not only represent itself as a fully functioning consumer organisation, but also to make sure or to ask questions and seek applications from other consumer organisations about things that they can do to assist us in meeting the needs of our members. Every consumer organisation, I believe, needs to function on its own merit. And in terms of funding, there are many different vehicles for funding available. In another role, I am an organisation that provides a great deal of funding to New Zealand over the course of every year. And I'm responsible for making sure that those organisations that we do fund are robust, are well-managed, can be audited, that report on time and provide us with timely information to make sure that we can continue to fund them. That is the least that I would expect of any consumer organisation.
Peter?
It is important that consumer organisations are funded, and it is probably in the future something that is going to happen less and less. I'm concerned about that. Unfortunately, we have an increasing amount of blind people, and we need to be able to fund these consumer organisations. However, it is important that we fund them properly and that the money is not wasted. It's put to good use. Technology is also playing a big part in our lives. We have to keep that in mind, but we have to keep the cost of it in perspective. So I think that consumer organisations need good management and good funding to be able to function. We perhaps need to lobby government more, I'm not sure. We need to talk about that. Raising money like we did yesterday and Friday is a great way of doing it, but it is getting harder and harder in our society to raise these funds. So let's look at new ideas of funding our consumer groups, and we will be much better off if we can do these different methods. Thank you.
That's all of you. So we're going to take a question from Dan. Microphone, please, Dan. Just
no.
Get up. Spare mic, please. Coming in.
Cool. So one of the key areas that's been identified as a gap to be filled is technology. So I just wanted to ask the candidates, with technology being such both an enabler and also a barrier, what their knowledge is and what they could bring to the table on that area.
Garth.
Thanks for the question, Dan. I think it's a brilliant one. Technology is a huge challenge. It is moving at such a huge rate that's very, very difficult to keep a real handle on it at any given time, and that's why we need a great deal of expertise. A little bit of my background, I have been partially sighted since birth, but I have not been able to access support from the Blind Foundation until very, very recently, in fact this year. And for that reason, I've had to use adaptive technology in my workplace for many, many years. So I've kept ahead of and just watched what changes in the technology environment
things like the ability to use voice to text, the ability to manage social media, the ability to bring in huge geography for the work that I do as a financial advisor. It's challenging, and it's something we have to stay ahead of all the time, because one of the things that can also happen is that there are people out there who, with the best intention of the world, in the world, will recommend the technologies that are not only are counterproductive to our ability to integrate, but also just useless. And we've got to be very, very aware of those things. So it's a matter of just keeping the whole thing in balance and finding the right people to give us the right advice to make sure that the right technology hits the right people at the right time.
It's an important aspect of our life in this day and age, technology. I have been newly introduced to it since going blind, and the learning has been incredibly in-depth, but it is a wonderful way of us being involved and living our lives. I believe that the teaching of the technology is going to be incredibly important. We're racing ahead in times with what's happening. We now have good internet services in Christchurch. There was a time when they weren't that good. Let's endorse those services and use the facilities that are available. And probably we, as members of the Blind Foundation and those that are elected on the board, need to keep enhancing and keep strengthening the services that are being offered. It is harder in the South Island because we have a large area with not a lot of people, but it's still important that those people get the service of technology and can enhance, grow their businesses, grow their lives, and really enjoy it. Thank you.
Yes, I do not have any technology at the moment. My only contact is my landline. I have had a computer in the past, but I was never connected to the internet or on email. However, I believe that technology should be used in conjunction with Braille. It should be used as a tool in order to help people with the use of Braille. Those who believe that they need technology should be taught it, and taught it in a particular situation which they are comfortable in. So technology is important, but it is important only to a certain extent that it complements the use of Braille.
I use technology every day. I depend on it. As a blind person, I use adaptive technology all the time. And as a software developer, I do know quite a bit about how our technology works. But I don't want people to think that I'm sort of a techie only, because I actually do understand what makes technology work well for, you know, a wide variety of people. Which is one reason, I guess, why I did come up with the idea of the telephone information service, which has actually stood quite the test of time. I do think that we need good teaching of adaptive technology for blind people, and we need to teach it in ways that that meets the needs of blind people, particularly when they might be at work and doing other things. I think a bit more flexibility in the way technology is taught would be useful. And I really do think the foundation has to grasp the nettle of how to deliver adaptive technology training better than it does throughout the whole country, rather than in just specific areas that seems to be the case at the moment. There are people who just seem to, they talk about, you know, the instructor is visiting this week and I've got to get that done while this instructor's in town, won't be here for another 6 months. I really think we have to try to do better than that.
I completely agree with Clive's last comment. Technology is incredibly important, it's critical, there's no real debate about that. Yes, I use technology. I was probably one of the first email users in the country, actually. But certainly iPhone, JAWS, etc. And I don't think that the Braille issue is mutually exclusive, because Braille is evolving. You know, we've got these new refreshable Braille displays and Braille is keeping up with the rest of technology. I'd just add to the thing about more adaptive tech teaching for blind people. I'd like to add, what about other people? I think it would be absolutely fantastic if our families could know what we're using, how we're using it, and why we use it, because often they could probably help us out at times. At the moment, we talk past each other. Well, my husband and I certainly do. He can see the screen. I can't. So a bit more education for our families, but also the wider community, I think would go a long, long way. So I'd like to see this area strengthened.
Judy?
Thanks, Jonathan. I use technology and probably have used it since I was a small girl. I'm a Braille reader. I use technology for very practical things, including my Braille in everyday life. It's really important that when we're looking at people's technology needs, we're also looking at how they use it, why they use it, and not just letting them have it because they need it for work, but because they need it for their everyday activities. I also use hearing aids, so I need good connection between my cell phone and my hearing aids. Otherwise, my cell phone is pretty useless to me when I'm out. So there's all sorts of different ways of using technology, from a very practical to a very technical way. I use it in the workplace every day. You get to the stage you actually take it for granted until something changes and it doesn't work, and then you think, oh, I need a new update. We can't quite have new updates in lives, but we can have new updates in technology. And hopefully that the foundation can become more agile in the way that they provide technology support, and that perhaps it can be funded better by government to ensure that people get their technology for their very practical things as well as their study and their work.
Thank you. We now have a question for a single candidate. Rose will read it.
It's Rose here. So the first question is for Pam. What do you know about the Foundation's employment service? What do you see are the barriers, and what needs to be put in place to reduce the numbers of blind unemployed?
Okay, thank you. In terms of what I know about the service right now, I know a little bit about the history, actually, and a little bit about what's happening now, and I know that for many, many years it was no service. And in fact, I had to take some small claim to fame with a thesis that I produced in 2004 for my master's degree, which very much convinced the foundation they really needed an employment service again. So I was very pleased with that outcome because I felt that they do. The barriers, well, they're always a fear factor of employers out there, isn't it? I mean, that's the barrier to all disability employment, really. And so I guess the solution is more and more disability responsiveness training, and the Blind Foundation can do that, and I know that Workbridge can do it as well. I'm hoping to be doing that myself as part of my role with my organisation, because there really isn't anyone doing that as a full-time job. It's always the fear factor. I know that when I walk into an interview, I can just tell the shutters are coming down, because people sit there thinking, I don't know how a blind person can do that. I don't know how I could do that. I don't think anyone could do that. And, you know, knowledge of that is really powerful, because if you know that's what people are thinking, then, you know, you can address that. So, yeah, that's something that I'd really like to help with.
There's a second question, Rose. For another candidate.
This one is for Peter. In Peter's introduction, he mentioned guide dogs. What specifically would Peter be looking at with regard to guide dogs if he is successful in being elected?
Thank you. I'm very interested in guide dogs. Having farmed prior to going blind, I know the value of good working dogs. Guide dogs, I want to see the research, development, breeding and training enhanced considerably more than what it is. I believe that we are in a situation now with great technology that we can train and have more guide dogs coming on the scene for blind people to use. I think that the breeds need to be looked at once again. That has been looked at several times. Maybe we need to look at them again. I think that it is important that we have guide dogs that are unbelievably wonderful, like the one I have is. And I think it's important that in our training, we are taking all aspects of life into consideration, whether it be just for a small situation or a big situation. Let's enhance it even more than what we have. Maybe the Guide Dog Foundation needs to once again look at a corporate sponsor, such as they had for 10 years with the Bailey's Real Estate franchise. This may be of some assistance also. Thank you.
Peter's got this really, really useful knack of knowing when I'm stepping to the lectern and about to cut him off.
Is that bad?
No, it's quite helpful. We are going to take another question by email. I have to point out, people, that the questions, other than the first one, the ones that Rose read out, were sent while we were in this room and already underway. I love that sort of interaction and inclusivity.
It's Rose here, and I've seen two more hands go up. They will go on to the list that we already have of people in order in the room.
But no promises.
Right. So this question, we hear that there are a number of services, guide dogs, technology, and others that have long waiting lists. What do candidates see? First, do candidates see that wait lists of 6 months or more are acceptable because that's how long some of us are having to wait? And if not, what do you see or what would you task management with to reduce these wait lists?
6 months is too long. And I think that we couldn't expect management to just reduce that without looking very carefully at what is the organisation already doing. Is it a question of resourcing or is it a question of how resources are being used? So this brings into question scrutiny of management and really, really ensuring that management is not bullshitting the board but actually showing the board that it is using the resources it already has effectively, and that it and that the waiting lists that we're seeing are the result of a lack of resource rather than mismanaging of the resource.
Alan?
Yes. Sorry, I've lost the question.
Waiting lists.
Oh, yes. Sorry. I believe this is a matter of management of resources, mainly funding and staff. I believe that the foundation should acquire the amount of funding that it requires before it provides any service. Now, there should be a number of core services which funding provides anyway, but over and above that, the adequate staff should be recruited, given the funding that has been obtained, and definitely 6 months is far too long. And there should be adequate staff in order to sort of give the service which is required, definitely in a much shorter time.
I'm going to have to stop you there, Alan. And
6 months is definitely too long. On the face of it, I'm not sure if there would be a resourcing issue. I mean, the foundation is an organisation that turns over $30 million a year.
However, I would want to look at that. But I'd also want to actually look at what are some new ways that we could perhaps look at meeting need. And going back to the question before about technology, that could possibly be one way. In other words, are we meeting the needs? Are we trying to keep doing the same old thing the same old way? Are there different ways that we can approach the situation and use technology to ensure that those waiting lists are shortened and that people have their needs met in a much more timely fashion? So I want to really look at those things.
Peter? Have we lost you, Peter?
Yes, you've got me. My turn. I believe 6 months is too long. However, the resources that are available sometimes do not allow these services to happen any quicker. Let's work towards more resourcing. As the numbers of blind people increase, we need more resources. We have to, as members, and if we're elected as board members, we have to be aware of this, and areas need to be serviced and resourced accordingly. I know money often tells the story, but let's, as members, be more efficient, use our resources better. We can always manage them better than what we are at present. Let's try and do that and give these people the opportunities that they deserve and need to enhance their lives and make their lives a lot happier. Thank you.
You're part of me having a little bit of a chuckle about this question because I've only waited for 55 years. But that being said, I believe that that's a very serious question that needs to be asked of our operational and executive people, because as a board we have a responsibility for making sure that the right resources are with the right people at the right time. However, we also need to make sure that we give our operational people the means and the direction and the ability to be able to make those things happen. So as a person who hasn't been with the Blind Foundation for very long and hasn't sat on the board, these are some of the questions that I will definitely be asking.
Thank you. Just before we move to Judy, can I remind the three of you on the phone that you're on an open line? So we can hear you. Check the time. Judy?
Thank you, Jonathan. I think 6 months is too long for waiting, but I would encourage people to make contact with the Foundation and ask why are they still waiting. There's a bit of responsibility goes back to the person to keep asking and continue to ask until you find the answer that you're satisfied with. As far as wait lists go and wait times, I think it's an operational matter, but the board should be made aware of these issues so that the discussions can be had about what's the cause, what's the need, and where are the solutions sitting. And then it's the solutions that the board would be interested in to make sure that they are happening to decrease wait times and to get client satisfaction.
That's all. A question from the floor from Don McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I first just thank all candidates for standing? We're very grateful to you. It's not easy. The audited accounts for 2005 and 2015 show that funding for consumer organisations has gone down by hundreds of thousands, and the foundation's income has gone up by about 9 million over the last decade. Now, the question of funding of consumer organisations has been touched on, but can I put it to you this way? What value do you put on consumer organisation development in terms of capacity building within the consumer ranks, and what value do you put on consumer participation and partnership, productive, dignified, and useful partnership with consumers, and what steps will you take to ensure that relationships between the organisation, the foundation, and its consumer body are improved?
Pam.
Thank you. I place a high value on those things, and as I said before, I believe that the foundation is really lucky that it has the advice and advocacy available to it through the consumer groups. It is a model that I would suggest could be spread throughout the disability community and would serve the disability community really well. I do feel that as a board director, I should be able to move quite freely between the association, of which I am a member, and the board, and I would be horrified if there was any barriers to me doing that. So I just expect that that's the case. As I said before as well, I'd just reiterate, the model that I believe in is one where we have strong capacity and capability building through core funding, but then there's a series of project funding models where specific pieces of work would be agreed on and provided by consumer groups.
Clive.
Look, this is a no-brainer. the reason why the foundation should look more positively at consumer organisations is that blind people are willing to give of their own time and passion and energy to get things done that blind people want to get done. As I said before, if it could be organising a sports tournament, it could be doing some advocacy like we do, it could be peer support, and there's no question that if blind people are willing to give of their own time to do these things, they want them done. So, you know, you've already got that particular question covered. And I think that the foundation, if I was on the board, I would be persuading the board, trying to anyway, to see consumer organisations in a much more positive light. I think the foundation has fallen into the trap of seeing consumer, almost putting consumer organisations in the too hard basket and seeing them as a kind of distraction from the foundation's real purpose. But in fact, what consumer organisations are doing are always going to be very complementary to the foundation's service, because they're run by blind people who want to do the work to achieve those objectives. So I would encourage the board to increase the funding for consumer organisations significantly, still have in place the accountability mechanisms, but for goodness sake, let's see the value of what those organisations do.
Judy?
I'd like to focus on the building of partnerships and the capacity building that Don asked about in his question. And I think to a certain degree, dare I say it, we're trying to build capacity one way by through our the Advocacy Network pilot program. That's individual capacity. There's no reason why people who do that program can't give back what they've learnt to their consumer groups. The consumer groups must have a partnership with the foundation. Without the members, there wouldn't be a foundation. So I think there's plenty of opportunity to keep addressing this issue, keep looking at it in its current and new context. Things change, and we've got to look forwards towards what might change to make it different, better, and increase consumer participation with the foundation as groups and as individuals. So it's important, and it's very valuable. to have consumer participation, partnerships, relationships, and the capacity for those people to participate.
Alan?
Yes, I believe that the consumer organisation should be fully funded and that they be accountable by way of an agreement drawn up between the foundation and the organisation. In that way, the accountability would be in process. From the point of view of the relationship, I believe that this is a matter of sharing information and that one of the board members should be delegated to approach each of the consumer organisations' managements to find out what they want from the board, and the board could also tell the consumer organisations what it requires from the organisations itself. In this way, the information could be shared, and this would be on an ongoing basis that it would continue for as long as is required.
Garth?
I'm going to take us back to the vision of the organisation, and that is life without limits. It's really, really important from my perspective that the organisation, the Blind Foundation, as an organisation, is aware of and maintains a clear focus on that vision, that purpose, because that's why it exists. If a consumer group meets the requirements of that, a consumer group is able to prove that it can assist the constituents of this organisation to live independently, to get around, to use technology in life-changing ways, to read, to be socially active, to stay in work or find work, and contribute in a meaningful way to the world, then those organisations need to be supported in every way possible, but they also need to be held to account.
One of the very important things with consumer groups is the support that they get. And funding is an ongoing problem with any consumer group throughout our whole country. I believe information sharing is very important, and this has been something that I've been suggesting for the last 3 or 4 years, that different consumer groups need to share information, whether it be about a person, whether it be about their consumer group. It's important that we share the information so that it can be enhanced in the future and it can be made so that people can get that information, can use it, can utilise it, can enhance their lives, what they do, whether it be social or otherwise. Let's use that information and make these groups more successful. The reporting of consumer groups is important and they must be very accountable. So let's encourage, the funding is an ongoing problem. Let's encourage new ideas, new methods of doing that so that we can have very strong consumer groups and have a great foundation to be part of those. Thank you.
I think we've got time for one more question, so we're just negotiating whether we use the one on email. But candidates, we have a stopping time of 12, and I want to give you your minute closing statement. So the question that's about to come, I need you to answer extremely succinctly, please.
Right, it's Rose here. And just for people hooking in by streaming, all the questions so far that have come by email, the submitters have asked to be anonymous. That's why no names have been given. The question is that yesterday we continually heard about the difficulties and the need for members of our community to access technology and information. This morning, candidates have emphasised how they're going to give information back to everybody using technology. Knowing the issues that exist, how do you see the digital divide and this gap being addressed for members who simply don't have it?
Okay, the challenge to the candidates is keep it short, keep it sweet, please. Less is more. Peter.
Well, technology is racing and becoming very important. How do we access the candidates that don't have it? We need to offer them the opportunity to do that. I know that it's going to cost funding. I'm not sure how we raise that at the moment. That needs to be in discussion. But there needs to be more funding put into certain aspects of technology. And one of the things I see is perhaps the encouragement of more trainers who can train people to use computers, use JAWS, maybe even use mobile phones that blind people. Thank you.
Keeping it completely simple and making it as accessible to as many blind people as possible, I would be wanting to use the telephone information service. That, to me, was a real game changer. It continues to be something that is accessible to most people, therefore it is what we should use. Thank you.
Clive?
Well, if the question is more about the access to technology generally, I would be looking at funding, increasing the funds of the Pearson Fund, but also, and obviously making sure that the training is there for people to learn to use the technology that can be that they can get through with that kind of assistance. But we need also to improve understanding of this with the Ministry of Health and with government generally, because I think that the funding of technology for access to information should be a higher priority in terms of government funding.
Alan?
Yes, I believe a needs assessment should be undertaken to find out if the member either needs the technology or wants it. If the answer is yes, well then there should be some way found in order to be able to fund it and to teach it.
Garth?
Technology is a tool. That's what it is. And if this technology, the technology that we're looking towards, helps us to be able to get around, to work, to live, to contribute back to the community, we need to investigate it in great depth, and we need to encourage it, whatever it takes, to proceed. That's all.
We should be looking at promoting the market to build the access into the technology when it's developed. We should be looking for inexpensive options, and people should be given the choice to choose the types of technology that best meets their needs in order them to have a good quality of life in their everyday living.
Thank you. Right. A closing statement from each candidate. They don't know which order they're going in yet. Garth.
Thank you very, very much for the opportunity to present my credentials and to answer your questions. It has been a privilege and a pleasure, and I hope it continues to be so. I don't measure myself by how the organisation will benefit. I measure myself by what I can do to benefit the organisation, how I can contribute to the governance culture, how I can help to manage the risk that the organisation faces going forward, especially the risk of continuing funding. I need to be able to make sure, and I want to be able to make sure, that we pay attention to our systems, our processes, our outcomes and our vision. And I want to be more inclusive, because one of the things that I have read in recent times is that we are struggling to be able to be relevant to a lot of people out there who need this organisation very badly. It is my intention to contribute my time, my energy and my passion to make this happen.
Alan?
Yes, since the 1st of May 2003, the foundation has been the foundation of the blind in name only. It has never been the foundation of the blind in action. To become the foundation of the blind both in name and action, the power to influence and control how the foundation conducts its operations and activities must be transferred from the board of directors to the governing members. Now, if that happened, the board of directors, management, and administration staff would have to be responsible and accountable to the governing members at all levels of the Foundation's operations and activities at all times. In other words, the Foundation's operations and activities must be member-driven.
Judy.
I have... Right, sorry about that. In conclusion, I'd like to say I'd like to still be re-elected to the board. Again, I have got some 3 years current experience as a board member, which I would like to continue to be able to use. When the microphone bumps me on the nose, I know I'm in the wrong place. I'm a strategic thinker. I have a policy background. I have project management and leadership skills that I have gained from working as a disability advisor in the local government area in Hamilton. I value diversity on a board, and I think it's important to have regional representation as well as having good public engagement. It's critical for the board to meet with the public and to talk to them about what the issues are important for them. I would do this as a board member. I'm always interested in knowing what people think, how they're feeling, and if they've got some good ideas I can take to the board table, I'm really willing to hear those ideas and talk to people about how they can progress things if they're unhappy with what is happening. I am very much a people person. I'm a practical person. I have a great knowledge of blindness from an individual perspective, as well as from that political, national and consumer perspective as well. So I'm really keen to stand again and be elected for a further term where I can put some of this knowledge and interest on the board table.
Thank you. Clive.
Well, people, in asking for your vote, I would just emphasise some of the personal strengths that I'd bring to the board. We haven't sort of covered those yet. And I would suggest I have integrity, very thorough knowledge of blindness and vision impairment. I'm very thorough in my work. I work hard, honour my commitments, well organised. I do digest information quickly, and I have very good attention to detail, but above all, a passion for the role. So I think this has been a wonderful opportunity to talk to you all in this way, and just look forward to your vote.
Peter.
Thank you. I have the passion to fulfil this position should I be elected. I solicit your vote. I am, I believe, the only person from the South Island standing. It is important we have a representative from the South Island, as well as the fabulous people from the North Island. I have a lot of integrity. I lived in a community. I farmed and I've raised a family there. I am passionate about what the Foundation does. They do a fantastic service. Let's enhance that and get it even stronger, whether it be technology, whether it be physical activity such as recreation groups or social groups or learning groups. It's important we enhance all these different things. I'm just a person, but I have a lot of time to put into really enhancing this opportunity, and hopefully I can solicit your vote. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you all, and I wish you a great conclusion to your conference. Thank you very much.
In seeking your vote, I just want to let you know that my personal and professional life straddles both blindness and disability communities and the wider state sector. I've had lots of experience with managing people, managing budgets in the millions of dollars, so I've had all those sorts of experiences. I think the fact that I'm a member of the Workbridge Board would absolutely enhance the Blind Foundation Board and certainly serve the cause that I've espoused earlier of increasing the relationship, the quality of the relationship with Workbridge, increasing employment for blind people, and getting more blind people into more senior positions within the foundation. Yesterday I heard someone say that only we have the moral authority to speak for ourselves. In my organisation that I run, my byline is nothing in our name without our direction. It's a value that I hold really strongly, and I seek that your vote to carry on that sort of work with the board.